Hello Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me again this week as we take you through the latest news, analysis and game action surrounding our Chicago Bulls. We're recording this one after the Bucks game and before the Raptors game, so you're hearing us on a Monday morning without having knowledge of how this Raptors game has transpired. Now, unless a miracle has happened and the Bulls have beaten the Raptors, maybe our moods have changed a little. But as of right now, we're a little flat, Fred and I, and he's phoning in from Jabari Island today. I'm not sure how Jabari Island has telecommunications, given how remote it is at the moment, but Mr. Frederick Pfeiffer is on the line. Fred, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I don't know why I'd be down. I mean, Jabari had a pretty solid game yesterday for at least the first half.
Yeah, I mean, first quarter.
He wasn't the reason at all that we lost. I think he was far from it. There were many other reasons that were far more impactful. Unfortunately, I don't know what's going on with Zach LaVine lately. 3-for-11 again last night, 0-for-2 from three. He's had four just awful games in a row. I'm starting to get quasi concerned. I know they're throwing a lot of players at him. I know they're blitzing him with several defenders, but he really is making some awful decisions on the perimeter. I love everything about Zach when he takes it to the rim, and I know it's difficult and I know it's hard, but when he settles for the jumpers, the results have been just awful. And for us to win games, he's got to play just average at least. If he has keeps continuing to have games like he did last night, we don't have a chance because it's just him and Parker as consistent scorers. And outside of that, there's not much you can depend on the offensive end. What say you?
I say over his last 10 games, Zach LaVine's averaging 22.8 points per game, which sounds pretty good, as does the 5.8 rebounds and 4.4 assists. But then when you look at the efficiency numbers, 38% from the field, 25.9% from the three-point line, 48.9 true shooting percentage, that's pretty, pretty bad. So it hasn't been a good stretch here for Zach LaVine over the last 10 games. So it's pretty much more than half the season. So he's been struggling over the last 10 games. And at some point, I guess it was going to catch up to him. He wasn't going to remain as efficient as what he was. But given all the injuries, as you said, defense is really honing in on him, blitzing him hard and all those sorts of things. I expected him to regress a little bit. But at the same time, I think he's also regressing into that old Zach LaVine that we saw last season, that was one that was probably too much in love with his fall away and contested jumpers.
Yeah, I gave you some incorrect information. I was talking about the Boston game with the 3-of-11. He was 6-of-20 last night. So, I mean, even though he is still putting up numbers total numbers, his efficiency just, as you kind of alluded to, just gone off the, you know, back to where he was last year, and it's not good. You know, I basically, the last good game he had was against the Knicks when he was 13-of-25. In the five games since, he's 9-of-26, 9-of-22, 8-of-23, 3-of-11, and 6-for-20 from the field. And in those same games from 3, 2-of-5, 1-for-4, 0-for-6, 0-for-2, and 1-for-5. So he's 1-for-his-last-11 from 3. I think that's a big problem there. That's a big part of LaVine's game. And any great perimeter player, if you're able to hit the 3, it makes it that much more difficult for teams to guard you because they do have to, you know, show hard on that and allows for penetration, makes it easier for him. I just hope that with the return of Markkanen and another real legit offensive force, that we'll see him kind of find a nice spot as the second offensive option for this team and become more efficient and use that opportunity to attack the rim as opposed to settling for jumpers. It's just so hard to expect the guy to, there's just so much on his back, and I understand how he feels. It's very energy sapping to just continually attack the rim, especially when they're throwing so many guys at him.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I'm not going to be overly critical on LaVine because this is entirely expected. Whilst, like I said, he has been taking probably some more ill-advised jump shots than what I'd prefer. Again, the kind of attention that he's receiving, given that he started this season averaging over 30 points, it was pretty easy for opposing defenses to look at the Bulls and just say, if we stop LaVine, we're going to stop this team. So it's not too surprising that his numbers have sort of cratered off here. But hopefully once the injured players return, it makes things a little easier for Zach and we see those efficiency numbers creep back up. But we won't know that for another 2 to 4 weeks, roughly in that vicinity. once all four of those guys are sort of all back. So we'll see how it all sort of transpires, but at least for the next week or two, it's going to be rough going here for Zach LaVine. And like we said, Fred, we haven't watched the Raptors game just yet, but I can't imagine that's going to be an easy one for him either with their perimeter defense. But what did you make about the rest of this Bulls-Bucks game? It was a pretty damn good first half. After that first half, I messaged you. I said, this podcast is going to be a really good one. I was thinking maybe there was a slight chance the Bulls could hold on to that win. Maybe. But obviously, well, yeah, that did not happen.
I had a pregame prediction of I saw great things. I think I was confused. I think I was referring to the Windy City Bulls,
right,
in my prediction.
Yeah.
But I really felt like they were going to come out strong. I didn't expect them to come out that well. And Parker had just an insane first half with 17 first quarter points. Put that in perspective, the great Ryan Arcinato has a season high of 15. So he that really puts in perspective how great of a first quarter that Parker had. And then the second quarter again was problematic, but there were some good moments. I thought Blakeney was hitting some shots and there were some good things that happened. But I will admit there was a poll. Does anybody expect the Bulls to win with and they were up 18? And I think the vote was it was like 78% said no.
Yeah.
I was like, I couldn't believe it. What I did not expect is just the amount of time it took for us to lose that lead, to go from like up 18 to down 18. It seemed like it happened in about 5 minute period.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in that assessment?
It went super quick. It went in the third quarter, and look, to me, that's exactly how I expected it to happen. Cause there was no way the Bulls were going to keep up that shooting. Justin Holiday, you're his biggest fan. He had six threes in that first half. He was pretty amazing. Some of the shots he was hitting, but there was just no way those level of shooting was going to sustain. And of course, the Bulls were never going to match it, and you would expect at some point the Bucks on their home floor to sort of come back here and do something, which obviously they did. The Bulls were up by 22 points at one point, but then pretty much surrendered that, and then all of a sudden the Bucks got up by 22 points. So it was a huge swing. You don't really see that type of swing from a points differential on a daily basis sort of thing. It's kind of crazy to actually see it happen, but it was in some ways entirely predictable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Entirely predictable. I don't know if that's entirely predictable. I did expect them to at least lose it in the fourth quarter and to hold on. It was just an avalanche of several factors. The Bucks getting hot from three. And then just also the officiating. It's when Giannis, it's impossible to guard a guy if you're going to ref like that. I thought there were several calls in the game where the Bulls had clear positioning. Ryan had one. I thought Parker drew a charge. The one that Arcinato had was not on, I think that might have been on Bledsoe. But you just can't guard the guy if you're going to make calls like that, you know, because you're trying to force him into outside shots. He's not a great outside shooter. But if he's able to just attack the rim, and anytime there's contact, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt, then you don't have a shot. You don't, unless you're still shooting at an insane percentage. There was one more bright spot I do have to mention. Wendell Carter Jr. Every game the guy plays, or something else I see that just, you know, just gets me so excited. And I saw you say he was the best big man in the draft. I agree 100%. Not only do I believe that, I think, number one, he should garner all NBA defensive votes this year. I don't care if he's a rookie. That's how good he's been defensively. Number two, he's already top 10 in blocks, which for a rookie who's on limited minutes is insane. And he has 6-8 last night from the field. I thought he showed a little bit more in the offensive end with some nice post moves, hit a couple nice short jumpers. And another underrated trait of this guy is when he sets picks. He obliterated a few guys on picks yesterday that I thought were just so well set, so sound fundamentally. I can't say enough good stuff about this guy. He had 4 assists, 2 and 4 rebounds. I don't know why he only played 24 minutes. I guess he was in foul trouble, and then the game probably got out of hand enough where, you know, Fred didn't want him in there anymore. But I am so excited about his future that I'm starting to even think that I maybe had sold him a little bit low. His ceiling actually might be higher than what I first originally anticipated. What say you?
He's a freak. He's a freak. I mean, one of the first possessions of the game was Wendell Carter Jr. stopping Giannis in transition. He basically just pulled him up and forced the jump ball, which is insane. He's a 19-year-old rookie center. If we think back to the draft, some of the concerns about him was, could he stay with perimeter players out on the perimeter? And here he is sort of just tracking Giannis in the open court in transition, sort of grabbing the ball, blocking the shot, forcing a jump ball type situation right at the start of the game. There wasn't many highlights here for the Bulls in this Bucks game, but that probably was the biggest highlight for me, at least. That one set me into a frenzy. Look, we've talked about it before. I'm all in on Wendell Carter Jr. I think he's going to be the best Bull in a few years' time. He's going to go past LaVine. He's going to go past Markkanen. He's the most complete player this roster has. The one that has the most potential, I guess, to be the best two-way player on the roster. So I'm totally all in on this guy, but... Yeah, like I said, it wasn't a game with many highlights here, but one of the guys who did perform, who I want to give you an opportunity to talk about his game, Freddie, it was Justin Holiday. I want you to use this platform now to say some nice things about Justin Holiday, because you've said a lot of not so nice things in the past, but I think after he made 66.7% of his 3-point shots, hitting 6 threes in the first half, as I mentioned before, I think now would be an appropriate time for you to send him a little bit of praise, don't you think?
I mean, of course, you hit 6 threes in a half. You deserve a pat on the back. I will counter that I thought a lot of that was due to the way Milwaukee was playing LaVine, and our good friend, mutual friend Kevin Anderson correctly pointed that out. If you go back and watch his 6 threes, you know, he was wide open, and Parker had it going, so the Bucks defense really was focusing on him and LaVine, which left a tremendous opportunity for Holiday. He took that opportunity and he grabbed it. Of course, Holiday does what he often does, which is in the second half, he came out and shot. I think he was 1-for-6 and 0-for-3 from three. That's the Justin Holiday I know. And I understand, hey, he had a great first half. Congratulations. Regardless, the guy is, to me, one of the most frustrating players on this team to watch. I think he's awful. You know, he's a backup three, I think on a good team, he's not even a backup three. I think he's a, you know, 14th or 15th guy in the roster. For every one of the games that he has, like, you know, he had last night, which was, you know, basically 7 or 12 from the field, he had a really decent night. He'll have a game like he does, you know, in Boston, where, let me look what he was. He was 2-of-10, 2-of-7 from three, 6 points, and he just kills you because he doesn't get to the line. He doesn't get rebounds. He doesn't really get assists. He does nothing but just kind of wander the court and play average defense. So I don't understand why Fred plays him so much. I want to see more from Hutch. I think Hutch is clearly has a much higher defensive ceiling. Offensively, I hope he develops. But what are we doing? Like, why are we playing this guy? He's in the top 10 in the league in minutes. And as Sylvie correctly put it last week, what's the point? Right? I mean, that's what I feel about Holiday. Hey, he had a great game, but do you think anybody's going to take him off of us? We couldn't trade him last year. Do you think it's actually a possibility that we're going to get something for Justin Holiday? What say you?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely possible, but it depends what the Bulls want. If the Bulls want a first-round pick, then they're kidding themselves. If they're willing to settle for a second-round pick, then that's in play. But I don't know. It depends on what they want. But I'd be surprised if a team, like a contending team, wouldn't be interested in a guy that's hitting 40% of his 3-pointers. Like, why would you not be into that type of player? And
because he's not. That's not what he does for his career. That's the problem. He's a 33% 3-point shooter, and then everybody knows that he's not going to continue at those numbers the more he plays. That's the problem. And that's the other thing. We'll get a second round pick for him. I don't believe that's true. I don't think it's true. I mean, I guess we'd have to ask the GM. I know for certain they couldn't get a second-round pick for him last year. That's a fact. They tried to trade him.
He had another year on his deal. I mean, he's an expiring contract at this point.
Good point. Very good counter. You know, I don't think the Bulls are dumb enough to hold on to Justin Holiday if they're going to get a second-round pick offered for him. Maybe I'm wrong in that. I mean, I don't believe in second-round picks anyhow. But
I know you don't. I know you don't. We won't argue about that point.
But. I just don't want to see him play. I don't want to see him playing as much. I want to see Hutch ahead of him. Do you agree with that, or do you disagree with me on that point?
Well, I mean, Hutchinson's got to improve offensively. He's shown things rebounding. He's shown things on defense. I think he can be a good player, but thus far on offense, he hasn't been very good. He's had occasional games where he's sort of popped up here and there making baskets. He's a really good dunker. He's got a really good ability in sort of cutting through the lanes or finding the lanes, getting to the basket off the ball at that. So I think he has potential as an offensive player, but he's nowhere near that at the moment. So, and with Valentine out already, the Bulls need someone out there that can sort of space the floor on the wing, and Holiday is doing that this season. So I sort of get why Fred is leaning on him. If you're going to give a a coach, a guy that can go out there and give you 30 minutes and on occasions fire up the way he has. I'm not surprised the coach would lean on Holiday given the depth issues the Bulls have at the moment. So it's not too surprising for me. But did you see him? Did you watch the Bulls Outsiders last night?
I did. I missed it. Why? Oh no!
Was my name brought up? They answered one of my questions. I asked them a question, and I asked the question in hope that you were listening or watching rather. And then I asked, contracts considered, who has been the more productive player, Justin Holiday or Jabari Parker? What do you think they said for it?
Well, contracts considered, of course, one guy makes what, $4 million, the other guy makes 20.
Yeah.
So I mean, obviously, yeah. Justin played well.
You're very close to admitting it.
I'm admitting it. Yeah, I mean, so far, I mean, if you're going by ROI, return on investment, of course, Holiday's he's playing. I don't want to say he's playing well. He's been inconsistent, but he's had some great moments and he's had some awful moments. That's the thing with me at Holiday. I'd like a player a little bit more just good and consistent. He's so up and down, and when he plays well, the Bulls have a chance of winning, and when he plays terrible, which is most nights. They don't have a shot, but I'm sure that's how they answered it, right?
Did
anybody disagree? I mean, all right, let's get into Parker though for a second.
I do want
to mention Parker because he did score 21 yesterday, and this idea. Well, he had a great first quarter the last two nights, and he did nothing after that. Well, he didn't play the last quarter and a half of the Boston game because we were blown out when he sat out in the second quarter, and so I mean, yeah, he didn't have a great second half. He only played 26 minutes in the game. So my gosh, I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore, Mark. I'm so sick of this magnifying glass on every minute a player is out on the court. If you do that with every player, you're going to find moments that are
not great.
Not flattering.
Not as egregious as this. They're not as egregious
Possibly. Maybe. I'd like to think that, but I can find egregious moments.
No,
You're probably right.
You can't.
But I do want to say, I that's why I hope he's gone, just because I don't want to have these arguments anymore. I'm on Jabari Island alone. I thought after that first quarter, there'd be more people joining me. Instead, what I get is like people like bringing their ship up to the island and then throwing, their waste on the shore and then leaving. That's what it's basically been. And I do want to address a tweet from your friend, Morten Stig Jensen, who usually has smart things to say, but we all have our off days. So, I want to address this because a lot of what he says in this tweet, he has a series of tweets that came out, I think, overnight that I saw this morning that just enraged me. And I do want to address it because I think it's kind of like a common theme throughout the fan base. Now, his final point, which is the Bulls should buy out Parker, is so insane that no one but him would suggest that. As an aside, do you really believe that we should buy out Jabari Parker? Do you agree with that?
I'm not far away from it. I'd probably lean more towards that than keeping him.
Mark, this is a league that requires scoring.
I don't care.
He's had one game where he hasn't had double digits in scoring. Do you really believe that at the trade deadline there are no teams that are going to be interested in a 23-year-old scorer with a expiring deal?
I think there's going to be zero teams that have interest in Jabari Parker, who loafs up the court defensively, who gives up on plays, who has no interest in playing defense whatsoever. I had so many screenshots and videos of this Bucks game where Parker wasn't even in the freaking frame when the Bucks were going back to play offense. There was this one play where he turned the ball over in the fourth quarter on the baseline, and he did not even sprint at all to get back and
when
play on defense.
20, Tony Snell hits the three,
and Parker just doesn't enter the frame at all. What are you talking about? No one's interested in him.
No, you look for – yes, that's not true. So let me explain why. First of all, let's go back to his tweet. One of his tweets was – I'm going to quote it here, for a developing ball club, he's the worst representation of how to put in work, end quote. All right, let's stop. And I'm going to address that first.
Right.
He's overcome two ACL injuries the same knee. Do you have any concept of the amount of effort or work it takes to come back from that? Do you really think his teammates are unaware of his injury history? Or they just watch, your tweets and Gustavo videos, and then they text each other with the thoughts comment. Do you think that's how it goes down inside Bulls Central?
No.
I had a severe ankle injury in my playing career that basically ruined my career. I had friends that had ACLs. It's 10 times more difficult to come back from that. So let's just stop right there with this guy doesn't work. Just to get to the point where he's at 23, he put in work. And I think his teammates are aware of that. And let me explain to everybody how it works in the real world of basketball. Every team has players with a wide variety of skills and work ethic, ranging from great to awful. I had teammates who you and Mark, my buddy Mark Lewenthal and Morton, I'm sure would have loved watching. You had been rewinding all the videos of them and all the defense wins championships fans here in Chicago. They had natural skills. They had athleticism. And they had, you know, personal frustration about their lives. And they channeled it into defense. And that's what they did for our teams. Right? Great defenders. Incredible natural skills. You know what else? They usually shot about 40% from the free throw line because they never practice it. They couldn't hit a shot outside of 5 feet. And they hated working at practice. They showed up late for practice. They hated putting in hours. The hours that it takes to become a good shooter. They showed up late. They were terrible teammates. So some of these players with horrible practice habits that were beloved by fans, like Dennis Rodman, you know, Dennis Rodman didn't even show up for practice on most days. Phil Jackson had to show up at his apartment and beg him to come to practice when he wanted to institute a new play. But the coach and teammates, they tolerated him because he was one of the best rebounders of all time. But he had zero impact or zero influence on his younger teammates because he didn't show up to practice. So I know Mort probably loves him. I know you probably love Rodman. Everybody loves Rodman, right? It means nothing. It means nothing about how hard he worked in the game. He didn't work at practice. So,
any of this have to do with Jabari Parker not giving a crap on defense?
I'm explaining. His point was for a developing ball club, he's the worst representation how to put in work. No, he's not. Do you really believe that how he plays and how he showed on a couple of those 3-pointers has any impact on Wendell Carter Jr.? Right? It has zero impact on him. Let me explain here. Look, little first one here. His other quote: hanging on to Parker for even the remainder of the season can have severe consequences, not just for the development of Carter and marketing, but for upcoming free agents. No, it can't. What are you talking about? Do you really think the consequences you feel that these videos that you have, do you think they have any impact on Wendell Carter Jr.? Is that what your point is? I can tell you the only consequences on Wendell Carter Jr. will be severe is if he could start getting an undue amount of defensive attention on the offensive end. Yeah, that will be a problem for him, and he'll start losing confidence. Well, you know what? A good way to do that, why don't you buy out Parker, and let's see how that works with the team right now as is. So just the concept that Parker's play is having a negative consequence, a negative impact on her, it's so stupid and so insane, it's beyond belief. He even throws a cat under the bus here, Karl-Anthony Towns, his career, he started from 3-point line. His first career, he's 34%. Now he's at 43%. Do you know the amount of hours it takes in a gym to get that kind of improvement at the 3-point line? Who gives a crap with Jimmy? He's like, well, his work ethic is questionable. Based on what? What Jimmy Butler says? Jimmy Butler thinks everyone's work ethic is inferior. My point is this idea that Parker's having a negative impact on his teammates is stupid. It's wrong. And let's just shut up because it's not true. It's not true. Wendell Carter Jr. is not hurt by the presence of Jabari Parker. What say you?
I have no idea where to go with that.
Well, I go somewhere. I want to hear it because I'm so angry about this stuff. I can't take it anymore. Well, and I hope he goes.
Well, I've got Morton coming on after you, so that's going to be interesting for me.
Ask him to explain myself and have him explain.
I'll ask him to explain himself, but I definitely think that Jabari Parker is having a negative impact on this team. Maybe not personally, maybe he's not going to hurt his development, but from a team perspective, there's no way you can sit here and tell me that Jabari Parker is a positive player for the Bulls right now. He's not making Wendell Carter's life any easier. He's not making his teammates' life any easier when he's not sort of helping them get back on defense when it's 4-on-5 situations. There was another play in this Bucks game where he completely lost Tony Snell. Tony Snell is a very good player. And he just completely lost him. How does that happen?
Yes, I know. I know we're pointing out every one Jabari Parker.
They're egregious, space. Fred. Like, they're not one singular player. They're not just a blown rebound. They're not a missed or overplaying a passing lane or something stupid like that. A basic error of that nature. These are egregious plays where he's not even trying or not even focused. That's the problem.
He also had a great defensive play on Giannis early in that game that I forced Gustavo to highlight. Because it was great. Yes, he's not always he has problems giving consistent effort on defense. The issue I have with this, and it's going we've already gone in the rabbit hole because everybody wants to prove me wrong, is that if you do the same thing with every player, Zach LaVine, every player in his team, there are going to be moments where you're going to be embarrassed and you're going to be like, wow, that was terrible. But nobody pays attention to that. And nobody highlights it like they do for Jabari. I agree. He's not great defensively, and he has far too many moments where he's horrible. But he's also one of the best offensive players on the team. Like, I don't buy what you're selling, Mark. Like, do you really believe that if Jabari Parker was off this roster, that these last two games, do you know what would have happened to the final score? I think we would have lost by about 60 points in both games. I don't think we would even have a chance. And we actually looked good in the first quarter from both games. We actually had an 18-point lead in the second in against the Bucks in Milwaukee. And to say, well, Jabari is the reason, that's basically what you're saying. That's basically what everyone's saying. Jabari's a problem. When we get our talent back, he's going to be a massive force on the second unit. Now, that's not what we're paying him for, right? I agree there. We were hoping he'd probably be a starter at the three and give us more minutes there. I think we both agree now. I've come around to that point that, hey, he's probably not best suited at the three and starting, but he could still be a valuable player for this team running the second unit. And it's just insane to me that people say, oh, let's just buy him out. We have literally lost our minds. And I know I have a big self-made house on Jabari Island. I know I'm there alone, but we have lost our minds because I don't agree with the general assessment. And you think I'm wrong. I know you do. And I agree with you. There's far more times that he does that. But if you tried it with every player, even the great Ryan Archie, not in the NBA, has moments where he's embarrassing on defense.
I don't disagree. But I'll say this. When Ryan Archie Diakono has a bad defensive play, it's not because of a lack of trying. It's not because he doesn't give a crap. It's not because of any lapses he's making on defense. The same you can be said with Zach LaVine this year. He's improved defensively in terms of his effort. He's still not a good defender. You can still highlight defensive mistakes from Zach LaVine, but in no way is he giving up on defense in the same vein that Jabari Parker is. That's the problem here, Fred. That's the separation. That's why we routinely see Jabari on these videos that surface all over Twitter, people mocking Jabari because he's just not even giving a crap. That's the problem.
Well, I know there's that video, that same video that has been highlighted. I must have received 20, 25 times from, it's unbelievable how many different people have sent it to me, where he's kind of jogging out on when the Bulls were down by, 30 or whatever. I don't even know at that point. And he's jogging out to, quote unquote, contest the three.
Yeah.
Just look at the same video. Look at Lopez's effort. Look at Blakeney's effort that I highlighted. You laughed out loud at me on it.
Because they weren't, that's not their man. They weren't there. They were already covering someone.
Effort? Well, how do we know that wasn't Lopez? I wasn't entirely clear that it wasn't Lopez, his responsibility. But for your argument's sake, let's say it was. He didn't put in the stellar effort on that play. None of those guys did. I know I'm on a losing side on this one because the whole world's against me, and I know I'm Jabari Island, but I do know this. I do know this.
What's
the theory that he's going to have, I think what his implication was, he's having severe negative implications on the work ethic of Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. is wrong. And it's not only wrong, it's so wrong that it's to the level of, it's beyond, it's like as wrong as you could possibly be in life, because Wendell Carter Jr. has, his work ethic is not going to be impacted at all by Jabari Parker. That's not the way the life works. That's not the way basketball teams work either. So well, I hope I made my
case. You've made your case. I've let you rant on long enough, and look, I'll accept your life lesson here, and I don't know if I'll take it on board, but at least I listen to it. That's all I can do at this point, I guess. So, but before you get away, I know you got to get away. I want to end on a positive note. something a little bit more upbeat than Jabari Barker's defensive issues, because that's probably something we're going to be talking about for probably the next 3 months, 4 months, I'd be imagining, unless the Bulls do buy him out. But I wanted to talk story time with C. Redfred. Yeah. What do you got for me this week? You got a basketball for me?
I got a good life lesson. It's a good life lesson for everybody, I think. And I hope you guys learned something out of this. And again, it has to do with my career in music. I told you guys the horrible story about what happened with the band and how we were, you know, how our careers ended. And it was unfortunate and all true. But after that, I said, you know what? I'm going to form my own band. And in Gigawater, I was probably the worst. I will admit I was not the most talented member of that group. But so I always kind of had this like little bit of an issue with, you know, an inferiority complex, I guess, as far as my musical talents, because the other guys in the band were just so good. So I said, I'm going to form my own band. And I formed Play Pants Jimmy, and the story of the name is for another show. But anyhow, we finally
What was the band name?
Tight Pants Jimmy.
Tight Pants Jimmy.
Yeah, Tight Pants Jimmy. Long story. It has to do with Las Vegas. But anyhow, so Tight Pants Jimmy is a band that I'm forming, and I booked us a gig at the Tuckaway to open up for another band. So six songs, right, is all we had to play. And then the gig would be over. So anyhow, we show up at the gig, and the band that was supposed to, we were opening for, didn't show up. So it was just us.
Yeah.
And so we're just there by ourselves. And the owner comes out, he says, I'll give you an extra $150 if you guys could play, you know, for two and a half hours. I'm like, and let's do it. The problem was, is that we only rehearsed six songs. So I had a theory that we could do the same songs over again and the crowd wouldn't get upset. So at that time I was in U2. We did Elevation, we did With or Without You, ROCK in the USA by John Cougar Mellencamp, into What I Like About You by the Romantics. And then we did
classic dad songs.
Yeah, we did In the Name of Love by U2, and then the there was one other song, I can't even remember what it was. Oh, it was Louie. That was, I always close with that one.
Right.
Louie. So those six songs. So we did it the first time, people were into it. And then we took a break, and then we did the exact same set again. And then we took a break, and people started, you could sense the crowd go from great to, wait, what's going on here? Then we did the exact same songs again. And by the end of it, people were visibly angry, booing, hissing. A guy, I remember it, we had four sets. We did the exact same song. After the third song, the guy, drunk off his rear end, comes up to me. If you guys play the same songs again, I'm going to punch you in the face. And it was just like, all right. So we, you know, we just played them again. And then I was watching the guy the whole time. So the moral of the story, always be prepared.
Right.
If you guys are, you should always have more than six songs ready before you play at a gig. Because when the opportunity knocks, you could really make the most of it. So that was sharing my story. What do you think?
Wow. I mean, that's a good one. Tight Pants Jimmy. I mean, we'll have to get into that name on another day, because I want to hear more about the thought process and just how you came about coming up with that ridiculous name. But it's not. Oh, man. It sounds like you're almost the Jabari Parker of cover band guitarists. Is that fair to say?
How dare you? Yeah, I guess in a way it's true. The first set was the best.
Just like the first quarter today against the Bucks, but the rest, not so
good. Very
good,
Mark. You always bring a laugh out of me. I got to admit, that was very good.
Well, look, I always enjoy talking to you. We'll speak again next week.
Sounds good, brother. Take it easy, man.
All right. God love him. That was C. Redfred, folks, at CBE Fred on Twitter. I love that man. He's a bit crazy, but I just love having him around. Love talking to him. But let's go to Morten Stig Jensen now, who I mentioned before. He is jumping on the podcast now to give his thoughts on the Bulls at large, but more importantly, Jabari Parker. Fred had a bit of a whinge about Morten's take on the whole Parker situation. So I'm sure Mort will have a bit of a retort here. But Mort, thanks for jumping on the pod. How are you?
Hey, Mark. How's it going? It's going well here.
Good, man. Good to hear. It's been a little while since we've talked. And I thought it would be a pretty opportune time to have you on now, given that you've been voicing your opinions about Jabari Parker. And I just got done with my good old friend Fred Pfeiffer, who, as you know, is a big Jabari Parker fan, and he voiced his opinion on things, probably differing to yours quite substantially. So I want to hear it from you. What have you made about the whole Jabari Parker situation? I know you're heated on this topic. Fred had a bit of a comment about your tweets that you had earlier this morning, where you were pretty much adamant that you didn't want to see Jabari Parker on this Bulls team anymore. I kind of understand that view, but I'm happy for you to elaborate your perspective here.
Well, first of all, I didn't know that Fred was a big Jabari Parker fan because I have him muted. I've had him muted for well over a year now. I don't know what he says. You were the one who told me actually that he was responding to my tweets. I don't know. He's just screaming into the abyss, which I think is pretty fitting considering where he stands on the Bulls.
Fred.
Yeah. No, it's a sad story. So here's the thing. With Jabari, I think it's very obvious if you have eyes and the ability to actually look at a basketball game that he's just not engaged in any way.
No.
Look at the closeout he had on, was it Chris Middleton?
I can't even remember who the player was because I was too busy just focusing on, Jabari going to run at him at all or not?
Yeah, no, not at all. Right. I think it was Middleton. And, you know, it's just that... that lack of effort and that lack of work ethic in games, that's just, it's just ridiculous. Like, he's just not doing anything, really. Against Detroit earlier this year, you remember that whole sequence, like the long offensive rebound that Blake Griffin got, then he worked himself inside and scored over Wendell Carter with I think Drummond or another Piston center was right there. And Parker, instead of rotating back over and hustling back into the paint, was just standing on the perimeter watching his man go to town on Wendell Carter. Like, this has been a thing throughout the whole season. And I'm fed up with the Jabari Parker experiment if I'm a Bulls fan and if I'm a Bulls observer, because his lack of intensity, his lack of just putting in any kind of focus and dedication to anything, it has to be draining. I mean, look, we've seen Wendell Carter come out and speak about the lack of togetherness and the lack of like defensive accountability. You know, this is a 19-year-old rookie who's picking up patterns like, hey, so we're lacking something. Like, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. That's a rookie. He's not even 20 games into his career yet, and he's identifying correctly, I should add, that the Bulls are just, you know, not picking up defensive schemes. And would you be surprised at all if it's Jabari Parker primarily that he's voicing his displeasure at?
No, I would not be surprised. I'm pretty sure he's taking a game at Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, maybe some of the guards as well, someone like Antonio Blakeney. I know if right. I was having to to guard the rim and I could see Antonio Blakeney in front of me and him letting his defenders sort of just go past, I'd be pretty mad at him too. So I'm not sure if he's just aiming directly at Jabari, but he's certainly taking aim at a few players. And there were some interesting comments from Carter Jr. and he certainly wasn't wrong. So look, I completely get it. I'm done with Jabari Parker. I've been done before it even started. So in that way, I am a little bit biased. And to Fred's point, I definitely do try to point out his defensive mistakes more so than any other player. But like I sort of alluded to Fred just before, the reason why we do that is we don't see any of these sort of egregious plays from others. Like even Antonio Blakeney, who's a terrible defender, he gets killed on picks and screens and those sorts of things. But in some ways, he's still at least trying on defense. And same thing with Zach LaVine. He was a bad defender last season and he was coming back from injury. So maybe we put it down to that. But this season, even though he's still not a good defender and you can still class him as a bad defender, I think there's been less moments where he's just been completely absent or completely checked out on defense. And he's at least trying somewhat more, which I guess that's all you can ask for. Whereas Jabari, like we sort of talked about before, and particularly in this Bucks game where you would think if there was any game that he would be coming out and really hustling hard, playing both sides of the floor, you would think it would be his return to Milwaukee in his first regular season return to Milwaukee, but that wasn't the case. And those egregious plays are just highlighted because they're so damn egregious, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you can't miss it. It's, look, I where I'm coming from with all this is solely out of the perspective of where the Bulls are. If this was a middling team, they didn't have any young rookies that were impressionable and who had to be developed correctly, you know, you could just say, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It's like the Magic, like where most players are, you know, very close to their prime and everything is ruined because they had a lot of bad apples. Like you just had to blow it up. But I think the Bulls have every reason to be very much invested in Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen, those two in particular. And having a guy like Jabari who completely undermines the message of a coaching staff where effort does play a big game, and that's with every coaching staff, not even at the NBA level, but every level of basketball ever. Like effort has to be there and accountability has to be there. And somehow Jabari's just getting away with it time and time again. Like he's a starter now, and he still seems to be still just not responding to anything. I don't know when this changed. Like he seemed really excited to come to Chicago, and then immediately after he made the whole, you know, we don't get paid to play defense comment, it seemed like after that point, because he, you know, there was a significant backlash to it, he just mentally checked out, and he hasn't been seen since. Like the same energy that he brought in Milwaukee, at least, we haven't seen that in Chicago, which I found interesting.
Yeah, look, I don't know what the situation is. Maybe he's just fallen out of love with the game. You know, after two ACL injuries coming back from that, which is a pretty valiant effort, really. I could probably understand why he doesn't necessarily want to go as hard as what he once did. I would have, you know, if I was in his shoes, I would have a fear of getting hurt again, but right. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being too forgiving for someone like Jabari, and I'm hopeful that he can turn it around. I would love to see him do that, but I just don't see any reason why in year five we should expect him to be showing any signs of turning things around. And you would think he'd be doing that now on a 1 year. He's effectively on a 1 year make good deal. So if there's any time for him to really be trying, it's with $20 million on the line for next season. But we haven't really seen. I think that's the most disappointing thing with it, about this whole thing. He's effectively playing for his career here, and I don't want to compare him to Carmelo Anthony because he's got obviously 10 years. He's 10 years younger than Carmelo, but I mean he could really be headed to a similar situation in a year or two where he's not earning much more than a minimum type contract. He'll probably still get a okay deal because he was a former number two pick, but at some point the league is going to find him out that this guy, all he really does is going to score. He's a 3-4 hybrid. He doesn't really have a position. He doesn't play defense. He's probably not wanting to come off the bench. He probably still views himself as a starter. So he's going to be in that awkward phase like Melo is currently, but he's going to be almost a younger version of Melo.
So you actually touched on something that I mentioned in my little tweet soap opera drama there. Basically, I also pointed out that Parker's lack of effort and lack of activity doesn't just hurt the Bulls internally. It also hurts them from a free agency perspective because players know. Like players know, you said the NBA will find out. Players understand each other's games for the most part. They know when a guy is mentally checked out, when he's lazy, when he's not competing, because they're out there. They're out there on the court playing against these guys, so they know. And when you see players now go up against Jabari, it's pretty clear that he's not getting any type of respect, and rightly so, because he's just not engaged. He's not locked in at any point. Teams often leave him, don't really, you know, push their defense up on him, at least, you know, defensively. And they go at him relentlessly on defense because they know they can get away with it. You know, the secret is out. And I agree with you entirely. I don't think Jabari is going to be more than, you know, slightly more than a minimum player moving forward if this trend continues. I mean, he's lost himself at the very least $15 million a year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I just want to expand on that point. Do you think, are you suggesting that from Jabari's point of view, that teams and players are going to sort of find him out in free agency, or more so the Bulls? Because if you're thinking the Bulls, I'm not sure if I agree with that.
Well, that's a good point. The Bulls, they don't really operate like many others, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them retain him because he is a Mark Bartlestein client.
Well, I mean, that's the issue here. Not the issue, but that's going to be an interesting side piece to this, because obviously Bobby Portis too, who is also a free agent, who is also a backup power forward, is also a Bartlestein agent or client, rather. So that one's going to be fun to watch.
Chandler Hutchison too. So let's look forward to 4 years and see what happens there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time. But look, this entire show has been very Jabari Parker focused. So let's move on from that. I haven't talked to you for a while, actually. So just give me your general take about this Bulls team. What have you made over the last month or so of basketball here that we've seen from the Bulls? And specifically, I want to hear from you about Wendell Carter Jr. Fred and I just talked about Wendell before. It was a quick little one or two minute hit on how good he has been. But I know you were super high on Wendell Carter Jr. too. Yes. So very interested to hear from you what you've thought about Wendell Carter Jr. here in his first 20 or so games.
So you know how most NBA comparisons with when players coming out of the draft are lazy and dumb?
Yeah, I do it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all do. The Wendell Carter Al Horford comparison, after all, was spot on. That is one of the few that really seems to be, oh, that's the perfect one. That's a nail on the head. I mean, that it's just so proper when you look at it. Like his defensive discipline is just amazing. He's got the verticality down. Like the way that he forced the jump ball on Giannis, I think Stefan Noah had a tweet about that. That is just so amazing. Giannis is one of the most insanely gifted fast break players in the history of our game. And he is that by age, 23, which is ridiculous. Somehow, Wendell Carter Jr. managed to just lock him up because he understands that backpedaling and using his arms, not to hit Giannis necessarily, but go after the ball at the right time, like just combine timing, his footwork, and understanding when to pounce on the defensive attempt. Like, he's just so smart. These are plays that we have not seen from any Bulls since, I want to say, Ben Wallace. Joakim Noah, as good as he was always better as a weak side defender, or at the best, as a weak side defender. Wendell Carter seems to be just an amazing man-to-man guy. Absolutely amazing. And when you go on the other way, you know, offensively, he's shown that he can hit jump shots at a high level. When he has space, he can take that 1-2 dribble and make some sort of floating game. Like, he has that in his repertoire. He still struggles, you know, shooting around the rim, but that's going to come around. He's, after all, a rookie. But I just love the fact that he's not forcing the issue at any point. And his rebounding, obviously, is excellent, as we all anticipated. I think it's only going to become better and better and better. I would go as far as saying that, you know, right now, I actually feel better about Wendell Carter Jr. than I do Lauri Markkanen, and I'm very high on Markkanen.
No, I completely agree. I've been on record saying that Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be the best player on this team, you know, in a few years' time, assuming they don't, you know, necessarily hit on another outstanding player in the next draft coming up. You know, maybe if they land an RJ Barrett or a Zion Williamson, maybe that situation's a little bit different. But based on the players we have at the moment and what we know to date, I'm pretty confident, based on his all-round play and the fact that he's probably not going to have a weakness in his game. He doesn't really have one now, but if you think about Wendell Carter Jr. in, say, 4 years' time, before he's even hit his prime is like 5-6 years away. So just think about the player he can be in 5 years' time when he's sort of starting to hit his prime, his athletic prime. It's insane what this guy could be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the three-pointer is going to come as well. Like, right now, he's only 11% of his shots are threes. So he's really hesitant about it. But when he gets his feet set, like that thing looks good. And it's not like he's airballing them or it's, you know, breaking them off the backboard. Like it's legit jump shots that have a high chance of going in, actually. And they're just, you know, bouncing around. When he gets that fine-tuned, he's going to be a unicorn. Absolutely.
Definitely. And I said this earlier today as well, but I think there's a fair chance here that Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be the best big man drafted in this 2019 NBA draft. I know guys like Marvin Bagley and even DeAndre Ayton will probably put up the better stats. DeAndre Ayton's going to be a routine 20-10 guy at some point in his career. He's not even that far off right now. But 20-10 doesn't mean you're the most impactful big man going around from this draft class. I'm pretty confident it's going to be Wendell Carter Jr. And if it's not him, it's probably Jaren Jackson Jr., who's probably the only other big that I was not disappointed, but the only other big that I would have loved to have on this Bulls roster. But I am so wrapped that this kid is a Bull.
Yeah, look, the Bulls just got a freaking steal with Carter at seven. I haven't thought that Bagley would be better than Carter since, I think, December of last year.
Yeah.
It was pretty obvious to me when watching Duke games that Bagley needs a very specific system to thrive. And to your point, you know, stats in terms of influence, it's almost like if you want to compare like prime Zach Randolph to prime Al Horford. Like Zach Randolph was what, 22-11 guy in his prime, which were never numbers that Al Horford reached. But, you know, give me Al Horford every day of the week and twice on Sundays. I mean, I just don't see a comparison there. So it's going to be a similar situation there. And in regards to DeAndre Ayton, who I actually had in front of Carter, admittedly, man, I was wrong. You know, Ayton he's good. He's an excellent rebounder. He's a strong scorer, and he's a more influential scorer than Marvin Bagley is. But defensively, oh boy. I mean, he looks like Zach LaVine out there. His head is cut off, and he has no grasp of patterns, rotations, you know, clearing the corners. It's just all reactionary, and it's just gobbling up the Phoenix Suns defense to a very bad degree. Carter, I don't think I've seen a 19-year-old this disciplined defensively. I mean, I at least not in this current era. I just cannot think back and find someone where I'm going, oh, that guy's absolutely there. We had a big man, you know, power forward, center, whatever, who was that influential defensively. I can't think of one.
No, I think it's fair. And the amusing thing is there were some question marks about his defense coming into the season because Duke played a lot of zone. We didn't really know much about how he would go as a rim protector in a man-to-man defense. There's obviously questions about him being able to hang on the perimeter with perimeter-type players, guards, forwards, those sorts of things. But he's pretty much shut down all of those questions. Well, not last week, not today, not last week. He's pretty much ever since he stepped foot on an NBA floor. So you don't hear those things anymore. They're just gone.
Yeah. Yeah. It was all about the whole, you know, can he guard point guards specifically, which I always thought was like a pretty weird, standard to hold him to. Like, can you switch out and guard a point guard for 24 seconds? Like, look, even the best big men in the league, even defensively, will get burned on those point guards. You can take Anthony Davis, one of the best big man defenders in the league, and put him up against like Kemba Walker. Kemba will get the better of AD on several occasions. Like, who is that magical big man who can come out and guard 1 through 5 with no lapses? Who is that guy that we're somehow holding these draft prospects up to?
Well, I mean, Draymond Green, I guess that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's the one guy, and that's, you know, to be fair, he's 6'7", so he's not, you know, a 6'10", 7 feet tall guy who has to maneuver differently. Like, it's Draymond, and that's all fine and dandy, but if you have this one, probably the most special, unique player in the NBA, Draymond, that is, if he's the guy that you're measuring everything up to, yeah, then you're probably going to swing and miss a lot in the draft if that's, you know, the guy that you hold everything up to. I'm just glad the Bulls actually got someone who was really good, because as we heard, they apparently were very much down on Luka Doncic, which I find very disheartening if I'm a Bulls fan.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, I guess. Who knows? Who knows at that time? There's a lot of rumors flying around, but all we do know is they did take Wendell Carter Jr. They took Lauri Markkanen the year before, so they've done some pretty good things out of the draft. So no matter how bad Jabari Parker's defense is, we always have that to lean back on. So that's the positive that I wanted to end the show on, Mort, because no matter how bad things can be with Jabari Parker, as we've sort of gone on about this in the podcast, there's always Wendell Carter Jr. there to make us feel good about ourselves. So I appreciate you jumping on the line, sharing your thoughts about Jabari, but more importantly, sharing your thoughts on the Bulls' big-time draftee, Wendell Carter Jr. Thanks for jumping on, mate. Before you get away, tell people where they can follow you online.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having me. You can find me at Twitter at MSJNBA, and I'm a co-host with Brian Zaporic on the NBA podcast, which you can find everywhere, now on Spotify as well.
Perfect, mate. I will be tuning in now on Spotify. That makes it a lot easier for me. So I'll be listening in. But like I said, thanks again for jumping on, and we'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, let's do it. It's been a while. Take care, man.
All right, Bulls fans. So that pretty much does it this week for Bulls HQ. Probably more Jabari Parker talk than I wanted to have. But given how bad things got in Milwaukee, I think we had to talk about it. I don't want to be talking about Jabari every week. Obviously, Fred and I joke about Jabari often, but yeah, I definitely don't want to go into this much detail about Jabari going forward, but we shall see, I guess. But it's just one of those things that happened given the nature of what had transpired. Like I said a little bit earlier, we recorded this one after the Bucks game and before the Raptors game, so maybe Jabari can go out there and have a good one. Maybe the Bulls can sort of redeem themselves after that terrible Bucks loss, but look, I'm not holding out hope for that one, but we'll find out in due course. But until then, this has been Bulls HQ, and you can now find us on Spotify too. So if you prefer listening to your podcast via Spotify, you can definitely find Bulls HQ up on in there. So get in on that. Follow the show on Twitter at Bulls HQ Pod. Follow me on Twitter at MK Hoops. And until next week, this has been Bulls HQ. I'll catch you all again next time.